Welcome to House Talk on News Radio Wham 1180. This show is a weekly conversation about all the things you should know when buying, selling, or maintaining your home. Join in with your comments or questions. Call or text 222-1180 or 800-295-1180. Now, live from the News Radio Wham 1180 studios in downtown Rochester, here are your hosts, Jeff Schofield, Mike Reed, and Andrew Schwert.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Jeff Schofield with RE/MAX Plus.
Mike Reed with All County Inspection Services.
Jamie Messner with Premium Mortgage.
And, we didn't talk about this, but I was on a call this past week with Barbara Corcoran, where she talks to a bunch of real estate people across the country. And, she was reemphasizing that the indicators are there that we wouldn't have a decrease in price. There is not a bubble. And which it makes sense. There's a shortage. Everybody's financially better off right now because, I think it was back in 2006 when they had the one adjustment because there were so many foreclosures and stuff. The average person's equity was trivial. Now with appreciation, everybody's got quite a bit of equity. So she's just advocating buy single family homes.
Yeah, I think it's... That's the way it is. I think we're double hit here in Rochester because we've always had those lower prices. So we have raised, but we're still comparatively lower than everywhere else. So I think this is still a good market for people to buy a house in. I don't think we're in a bubble. I think we're in a just accelerated pricing catching up to the rest of the world.
And a lack of inventory right. Market.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the opposite. Last time when we were in a bubble, it was a shortage of buyers with a huge surplus of inventory, and that's pretty much on its head at this point. Totally different. So, no bubble.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to tell. I mean, I wish if you could go back in time, I've got opportunities to buy homes, and, when people say, well, why don't you just buy it? I don't want to put it on the market. And I could buy it. I can get them more money than what I would pay by putting it on the market, and that's the way I usually talk them to going. But, in the last 3-4 years, our prices have gone up 35-40%.
Yeah, and we've got a couple investment properties that I'm looking at, and we're holding them or renting them, but part of my brain goes, how long can it continue with this appreciation? I feel like I'm letting it ride at a blackjack table somewhere. Like, at some point, maybe I should just cash out of this thing. But then you do the math, and you're like, well, maybe we just let it go a couple more months.
Refinance and buy more.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I'm just scared. I have no reason why. I just am scared. I'm afraid.
Yes, because it's unusual for our market.
Right. I think we'll continue to see appreciation, just not at the levels that we did, which is good. You don't want it to continue to rise at that rate.
Well, I think probably spoiled is a better word than scared. I'm used to putting money into this real estate and watching it go up, 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 up. And that's just a 3-4-5 year phenomenon where it's normally just that flat appreciation of 2-3%. And I'm used to saying, hey, I bought it for this. And now, look, it's worth almost double what we paid for it 4 years ago. And that's just, it just isn't normal. And that's what makes me go, well, I'll buy more. And I think I'll be spoiled going, I don't see, 10% appreciation this year. That's not good. I want to put my money in a savings account, which doesn't make any sense. My financial advisor's listening.
So you get 3%.
Yeah. If my financial advisor's listening, he's throwing things at the radio right now, I'm sure.
Well, the other thing, though, is you got to consider leverage.
Yes.
I mean, if you use a $300,000 house and you can get in there with 50 grand out of your pocket, that 50 grand is going to grow at I think there's some money markets where they're paying like 5-5.25% right now. But if you buy that $300,000 house, that $300,000 is appreciating at 5-10%.
Yes.
Or even back in the old days, 3%. I mean, we averaged 2.5-3% for most of my career.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I had an appointment in Greece this past week, and I stopped in Borders. I had to kill some time. Got a cup of Starbucks coffee, which I shouldn't do. I mean, that is just too strong for my taste. But I found this book, 100 Things to Do in Rochester Before You Die. Kind of interesting. And I kind of thought, well, this would be a nice book to buy and send out to relocation clients. Because I'm a firm believer. Now, I know myself, I am a creature of habit. I go to the same places. I go to the same restaurants. And I know I miss out on a lot. My significant other is like, have you ever gone here? And I'm like, no. I mean, I went to this restaurant. I've been there 200 times. I know the food's always good. If I want a good meal, I'm going there. You know, and I think for the most part, people moving into Rochester, they will do everything they'll ever do within the first 6 months of moving in here. And then it will literally be just like me, lather, rinse, and repeat. But I would say pick up this book. I mean, it's kind of cool, and it's got a lot of neat ideas.
Are they businesses or just activities? What's in the book?
Put calories on the back burner. Nick Tahoe's, yeah. Okay. I know people used to take it. When we have relocation clients coming in and they're going to work for a hospital or a business, you know, the idea is that we try to sell them on the area. We show them some nice homes that they can buy. We show them, obviously, we take them to one of the flagship Wegmans stores because most places don't have something like that. And I know cohorts of mine for years would take people to Nick Tahoe's, get them a garbage plate. And I'm thinking, we're trying to sell them on the coming in. Indulge in the best of the seasoning at Herd Orchard's Luncheon, Devour a Hot Dog. Yeah, okay, I should have read through this before I recommended it on air. Apple Mills, bakeries, so music, looks like entertainment.
It looks like it's more activity-based than...
Sanctuary.
Yeah, place-based.
Yeah, I think it's day trips.
Okay.
How about you guys? Do you like try different restaurants all the time?
Or? No, we're the same thing, you know. Especially with two kids in tow, you know, how fancy can you make chicken nuggets and macaroni and cheese at, you know, $9 a plate? So we stick to the same diners, restaurants. Now, when it's my wife and I, we like hitting up some different places, but you know, that's once a year that you don't travel around with the kids. You know, that's what's the old saying. There's no such thing as vacation with kids. It's just watching your kids in a different location. Restaurants are the same way. There's nothing exciting or new. It doesn't matter where you go. Chicken nuggets, grilled cheese.
You're not hitting fine cuisine at that age. Plus the prices. I mean, it's risky. You know, if everybody's telling me, hey, try this place. It's great. Or you hear them talking about it on the radio. And, you know, yeah, I'll give it a try. But, I mean, just for me to pick a place out on the street, you know, for a couple going out, maybe having a glass or two of wine and dessert, you're $150 to $200.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and it's like, do I need to spend that kind of money to have a mediocre meal?
Yeah. Are there any like activity type of things in that book? Because we like to go out, not so much look for new restaurants, we do, but as far as like activities, especially having dogs and things like that, if there's fun things around locally like parks or even like dog friendly breweries, I know there's a lot of those popping up. That would be cool to know.
Tower above Lakefront. The Genesee Lighthouse at Charlotte.
Yeah, that's cool stuff.
Day trips, yeah. I mean, it'd be worth just going through and checking off.
And Jamie, have you ever hit the dog bar that's over there off behind the old Sticky Lips, that area?
No, Better Together Dog Park,
It's got an indoor dog park with a bar. We hit that up. That was a lot of fun.
Was it? Yeah. We've looked into it. We've checked out the website, but we've never been.
Yeah. You just got to make sure shots are up to date and let your dog kind of run hog wild on a giant open indoor grass field and have a drink and watch your dog play with other dogs.
There's one of those in Webster's as well called Woofs. It doesn't have a bar, I don't believe, yet. I haven't been there in a while, but same idea. Just if it's too hot outside, too cold, you know, just take them inside.
We had talked about iBuyers a couple weeks ago. Instant buyers. And you see them, they advertise a lot on social media. We'll buy your house, you know, we'll buy it, any house, any condition, cash offer, you know, no inspection. And, you know, we heard like Zillow, remember Zillow had the iBuyer program where they were buying tons and tons of property, OfferPad, Open Door. You know, I've got a couple of these that I'm dealing with right now. And I will tell you that you're giving money away if you sell to an iBuyer. I mean, there is a gazillion investors right now that will buy any home, any condition. You know, they might not give you top dollar. When I get involved, my goal is to get top dollar. But I have had iBuyer homes where they get it under contract. The iBuyer company hires me to sell it, and they sell it for more than what they paid, and they make money. You as a homeowner, call me. Call whatever agent you trust and use. I mean, there's investors. Mike buys stuff, pays cash. You know, well, he is an inspector, so he's kind of doing it when he looks at it. But
yeah, I take 2 hours to look at the house before I make an offer. I just do a mental inspection. We just didn't write it down. That's all. That's the difference. We really go through the same thing as we do with an inspection as when we're looking at the house. But the iBuyer concept has always been an interesting one to me, in the fact that it seems the way it's marketed is that it's a friendly way for you as a buyer to buy a house at a lower price. But really, when you get into the pool, it's investors. So you're not getting a deal by going through an iBuyer program as a buyer. You're not getting a deal because you're competing with people who are cash offers, who are doing things differently that you're going to do with the house anyway. So I've always thought it was interesting in the way you see it marketed. You know, now as a seller of the house, it, you know, if you just want to get out, there might be an advantageous reason to do it. But you could probably slow the process down a little bit and make considerably more money by going through a traditional process. And Jamie and I had a really interesting conversation with some FHA consultant folks yesterday. So we'll jump into that and kind of piggybacks off of that. Give us a call out here, 222-1180, News Radio WHAM 1180. Welcome back to House Talk on News Radio WHAM 1180. 222-1180, give us a call. One of the random thoughts that I had while I was on break is, hey, if there's anybody out there up along the lake, give us a call and let me know how the waves are doing. I want to go out on the lake today with my boat. And last couple times I've tried, it's been beautiful here, and I get to the lake shore and it looks like something out of the North Seas outside of England. So, hey, if anybody lives up there, give me a call and let me know if it's safe to take a boat out. But going back to what we were talking about, the iBuyers, Jamie and I had a really interesting conversation with the FHA 203K folks on Friday. We did a Zoom call with a lady out of Florida and learned some stuff that we never knew about rehab loans, refinancing rehab loans, all of that. I really haven't even put it together all in my head yet. There was so much new information. Jamie, what was your biggest takeaway from that Zoom call?
It was a great call for sure. And being someone that has very minimal experience with the 203K program, just because of when I started in the business and the need for it and how it hadn't come up as much in the past couple of years, it was just really eye-opening to me, new opportunities that some buyers and sellers will have with the way we want to kind of position this program for them.
You were also saying that you know, it provides somebody with the ability that does want to get the maximum amount for their house, or they do want to put an addition on, but they go, it might just be easier to sell and buy that house, you know, with the addition already on or the more square footage. So they can do a refinance.
Yep. And that
was incorporate the cost.
There were the two big things that leapt off for me was that was the first one is the refinance of 203K. And the in a nutshell, what a 203K loan is very similar to other rehab loans. It allows you to borrow not against the current value of your house, but the after repair value of your house. So if you're in a neighborhood that, you know, you're a $300,000 neighborhood, but your house is two because it hasn't been updated in 30 years and you really need to put a new kitchen, bath, maybe an addition, you know, some all kinds of different things in there. The money out there to refinance is available for the after repair value, which was shocking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not currently have the equity in your house, but once you do the repair, you have the equity. And that was really interesting because that... Now, we go in those houses all the time where it's like the only person who can buy this is the person with the deep pockets to put it in and then sell it, i.e. an investor like your iBuyers. Well, now an average person, if they're willing to go through this program, which you know is a little more cumbersome than a traditional loan, but not really because the cumbersomeness comes after you get the loan. It takes about, what'd she say, 6 to 8 weeks to finance?
Typically, yeah.
Typically go through it, which is very similar for a traditional mortgage. And it was just a really interesting thing. So Jamie and I are going to sit down in the next week or two and start putting together some packages on how we can roll this out to the world and say, this is it. The other thing that I never thought of, and this woman, Catherine, threw out there at us, which was it's completely I never thought of it, was those people that really want to sell their house, that have been in their house for 25, 30 years, and they're just done, and they don't have the money to do the repairs, so they just resign themselves to staying in the house forever. So you've got those whole neighborhoods of houses that have been the same family for, you know, 25, 30, 40 years, and they just, yeah, we're just going to, you know, going to make this an estate sale when it's time to go. But with these 203K loans, it could encourage people to start moving before that, because now you have buyers who could fix the house to the way they want it. And it was really, it all becomes after repair value. And with our market doing what it's done, there's a lot of after repair value. There's a lot of value there because of the appreciation, and people aren't recognizing it. So once we were able to put this together, we were looking at it with agents saying there's a whole market that agents could reach out to neighborhoods and just say, hey, we've got this buyer that wants to buy in this neighborhood. We know you're not ready to sell yet, but you bought this house 40 years ago. You owe no money on it. You know, yes, if you put all the work in, you could make more money, but you've had to put the work in. So let's not put the work in. Let's let the next guy put the work in. Let's let the next girl put the work in. And you sell the house for, you know, what you think it's worth, because a lot of people are shocked. You know, when you start throwing out a value in a neighborhood.
Yeah. I don't want to poo-poo your 203, you know, vision, but you couldn't get an FHA 203K mortgage accepted in our marketplace for the last 4 years. Right. You probably still can't.
And I think it's because you're looking at it the way we've always looked at it, and that's what Catherine brought up. These are houses that aren't on the market right now. These are houses that people have said, I guess I'm just going to stay here because I can't afford to do the work, and I'm ready to sell. So you could be bringing new buyers to the market that aren't looking to sell because they're not familiar with the programs that exist to get new buyers in these houses and fix them. It's going to have to be at recruiting new buyers to come to the market.
Just to be devil's advocate here, somebody owns a house free and clear, and it needs new carpet, new kitchen. Why are they going to refinance the entire house? Why don't they just get a home improvement loan?
Well, and it's not for the people who need new carpet, new kitchen. It's for the people that need the new roof, the new furnace. Maybe they need to put the value of the house is going to come from an addition being on the back of it. So it's different than just traditionally flipping a house. I guess we can talk a little more about it when we come back from break. News Radio, WHAM 1180.
Welcome back to House Talk. Give us a call, 222-1180. We were talking about our conversation, Mike, with the FHA 203K consultant and how we think it could open some doors for sellers and buyers.
Yeah, for me, that was the next part. We talked a little off air with Jeff, and I think the answer to it is bringing new buyers to the table, people that wouldn't be considering selling at this point in time because they just don't think it's worth putting the effort they need to put into their house, and these programs would allow them to sell their house without putting that effort in.
Right.
My point, I mean, not to be argumentative, but it's my second nature. You don't need them. You don't need them. I've sold homes that are rehabs, multiple offers, cash offers. We don't need someone. There's enough buyers out there that'll pay cash, fair market value. I've had rehabs. I mean, I had one in Scottsville. I pegged it to be worth about 180 fixed up. They paid enough more that I don't know how they're ever going to make money at it.
Well, and they probably won't.
But they're, you know, it sold cash.
Right. And that's what this program was not designed for, the investors. It was it's designed for.
My point is, though, we don't need the home buyer that's going 203K. Someday when the market balances out, and we don't have a line of buyers right now. But
the problem is you don't have a line of sellers, and you have to find a way to encourage those sellers to put their house on the market. And a lot of these sellers and people that I come across just don't think their house is worth it, so they're not receptive to a conversation with a real estate agent at this point. So I'm just not going to sell my house because I've resigned myself to this is where I'm going to spend the rest of my life. And then I'm going to just dump it to, you know, an estate sale when I walk away.
I think that's where those iBuyers are.
Right. And that, well, that's where they're making a killing. The iBuyers are making a killing on that, because what happens is those people age out of their house and wind up in a nursing home or passing away, and the house winds up being sold by a family member that has absolutely no skin in the game. It's just an inheritance. And this is moving that, what these programs are designed to do is help move that timeline up. So those people that are not an estate sale, but that 5 years before the estate sale happens, how do you get those people out of a house? How do you get those people to say, I have equity and value in my home, I'm going to use that and enjoy it, I'm just not going to wind up letting my nephew have this 10 years, you know, from now when I pass away? And that's the way these were designed, is to basically move people up in that pipeline. And that's where Jamie and I were looking at it going, that may be where the opportunity lies, in educating people in moving that timeline ahead of where they think it is. So right now, if you knock on their door and say, hey, I got a buyer for your house, they just go, I'm not going to get enough money to make it worth it. Where if you can show them, we have more money for you for the house because the traditional buyer is going to buy it. But I understand what you're saying with the cash offers. But I know when I cash offer stuff, it is pennies on the dollar. Like
You're an investor.
Right. And that's,
you get a homeowner that doesn't have a place to live.
Right.
And they've lost out on five offers.
Yep.
They're not looking for a profit. They're looking to find a house they can buy. And that's what you're competing with.
Right. And you're competing with that, but then this adds the piece to it of the houses that those people wouldn't buy because it needs so much work. And maybe those people don't exist. Maybe you're right and they don't exist. But the conversations we have had and I have had with people is, there are houses out there that I would buy and fix up. I just can't get them because they're not for sale. So how do you get them for sale? And I think that's the conversation that needs to start happening, is there are a lot of people who want to sell. I have some great friends who live over in Greece, four-bedroom house, finished basement in one of those cul-de-sac neighborhoods, retired people who just want to move. They just haven't been convinced that it's time to move. They want to move. They're looking at the market and saying, I don't think I'd get enough out of my house to pay the premiums for the house I want to move into. And they've got to be educated that there is a way for people to do it. So
part of our conversation Friday, too, was the problem that now that prices have gone up, you've got some of your buyers that are priced out of those move-in ready homes, and the ranges that they were pre-approved for initially between the $100,000, $200,000 range. Like, you can't. It's so difficult. So it might make that option more available for those people if they stop looking at the move-in ready homes and look in something that needs like a little bit more work, or maybe needs that roof or that new updated kitchen. They buy it at that price and then take whatever gap they have left to put that work in after closing. So it might move some things that aren't selling right away within that lower price range.
Right. And that's where we thought was interesting in that. And because there are the options that we look at and we kind of go, ooh, you kind of hesitate, like the iBuyer. And then, Jamie, you were talking about reverse mortgages. So maybe a reverse mortgage is the other option. So this is one more piece of the puzzle that I know in Rochester we have not explored very much. I know they're doing it more in Buffalo. I talked to a gentleman out there who actually quit his home and sold his home inspection business, and now all he does is the consulting work. And it's really big in Niagara Falls, in the Niagara Falls market, where there are houses that have more or less been walked away from in entire neighborhoods. There's a lot of young buyers coming in and using these rental loans to bring those neighborhoods back alive. So it may be just a thing we need to explore in Rochester, kind of like the reverse mortgage.
Right.
So going back to the reverse mortgages, we haven't hit on it much. I know I've had clients that were interested. It's not something most banks or most mortgage companies do. I would say spend time on Google, because there's pros and cons, and very adamant in either direction, depending upon which side you're arguing. But Jamie, can you tell us a little bit? And I know you guys don't do them, but can you tell us just a little bit about how that works and where they might be, other than to Google it?
Yeah. I mean, basically, reverse mortgages are available for a specific group of people. Well, first of all, for most of them, you have to be 62 years of age to even qualify to get one. And as far as it being advantageous for you, it's typically in a situation where you're house rich and cash poor, where, let's say, an unexpected event happens and you potentially have to retire earlier than you thought, and maybe your savings account is not there, or the income coming after the fact isn't there. This is a way for you to have that monthly income coming in, or lump sum. You could do it either way. But really, what happens is it's not a true like reverse mortgage. It's not like you're actually giving the bank your title and they're giving you the money, whereas in a traditional mortgage where, you know, you're getting ownership of the home, you're giving us money. It's you're taking out a portion of equity on your home, and you can use it if you have an actual true mortgage on the property. You can pay off an existing mortgage with it, and then you get paid systematically over time. The balance of your mortgage increases rather than decreases, and then you don't have to pay it off until you no longer own the home. But it does have to be your primary residence. You do have to maintain the home. There's certain repairs and minimum requirements that must be met by the lender, and also pay your taxes.
And is it sort of like getting a HELOC or a line of credit on your house where you can just take money out? Well, no, because you'd have to pay that back.
Right.
On a regular basis.
It's somewhat systematic in getting payments monthly or a lump sum. So it's not like you can pull a specific amount at a time and then, you know, pay it back as needed, like a home equity line of credit would be. But yeah, we can talk more about that when we get back.
You heard drum music?
Yeah.
Drum music. All right. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back. So we were talking about pools, swimming pools, hot tubs. Do they add value? Let's focus on swimming pools. In my opinion, my experience, a above ground pool does not add any value. In ground pool, I'd say across the board, you could say it adds $5,000 to $10,000 in value. If somebody doesn't want a pool, then it takes away and they're probably not going to buy the house. And if you have somebody that's really, really looking for a pool, then, you know, a new pool is probably costing what, $30,000 to $50,000 these days with a concrete, you know, patio surround. So it's, you know, it's probably worth $25,000 to $30,000 for them to pay a little bit more so they don't have to go through that hassle. Which leads us into our second, you know, topic of conversation. What's involved with pools?
Well, and that's a great question because we run into this a lot. We do pool inspections. We have a great pool inspector, Terry. I'm a pool inspector, but I'm not a great one. Terry is an amazing one. She ran the YMCA swimming pools out on the east side forever in a couple of the different branches. So she's forgotten more about swimming pools than most of us will ever know. The problem is when you get a homeowner who has owned a pool for 10 or 15 years and they say, well, I know how to do what this swimming pool guy does. I know how to maintain my pool. And they don't see the long-term effects of really not understanding the chemistry that's happening in a pool. And you wind up seeing things like calcification all over the metal part. So basically those metal parts are kind of like your arteries. You see them starting to reduce from the outside, but everything that you see on the outside is doubled on the inside because you haven't taken care of dissolved solids, which are minerals that come in your water, things that fall from the sky and land on your pool water. And you then get that. Or they go the other direction and they over... You know, they overcorrect and they go the other direction and their water's very acidic. So now all of a sudden, all those metal parts and plastic parts are slowly day in and day out corroding over time. And then we show up to an absolutely gorgeous swimming pool that you would want to be sitting around at with your feet up. And then we start looking at all the pieces and parts and realize that your $50,000 swimming pool has $20,000 worth of repairs that need to be done. So that's where it gets lost in the weeds. Had that swimming pool been maintained properly, it would have a great value to your house. But you don't know it until you start looking at it. It's kind of like having a beautiful car and never changing the oil in your car. Well, the mechanic's going to look at it and say, well, the car's junk. It's got a beautiful, it's gorgeous. You did a great job taking care of the interior, but you never changed the oil. You never aligned the tires. You never had new brakes put on it. Now you have all this work that needs to be done to take it back to baseline. And that's the problem with swimming pools is homeowners that don't really understand pool chemistry and decide, I can do what the pool guy does. I can do what he does. And they do it wrong, and you don't notice it for years. And it's an accumulative effect. So we also remind people that if you have a house that you're trying to sell or buy, a swimming pool inspection is not part of a home inspection. That's one of those things that you have to ask for and negotiate for. You can't show up to the house and say, well, I want to have the pool inspected. Well, you didn't negotiate for that. You didn't. Your agent didn't put that in your contract. So any seller out there is going to say, no, that wasn't part of our arrangement. You know, all of those things that are extra outside of a home inspection, you have to ask for in the negotiation process or waive in the negotiation process. So radons, chimneys, swimming pools, wood destroying organisms. Most home inspectors don't inspect for general pests because we don't have those qualifications through the DEC, like mice, squirrels, chipmunks, that kind of thing. We will say, hey, we see something that makes us think there's a problem here. You should reach out to someone else. But swimming pools, hot tubs, they have a value if you maintain them properly. So
let's talk about swimming pools for a minute and like the repairs that you would see. You know, and I'm not obviously going to hold you to this. One of the big things you always hear about is the liner. If it's a liner, got a liner, liner's bad, needs to be replaced. What are we talking about cost on that?
Well, it's all going to be dependent on the size of the pool and then the entry points. Like if they have those walk-in entries versus a ladder that goes in. But you're talking, you know, I've seen them be $1,800. I've seen them be, you know, $10,000. It all depends on the size of the pool. And it looks like we're getting that it's time to go music in our ear. I'm Mike with All County Inspection Services, 585-773-4001.
Jeff Schofield, REMAX Plus, 600-5333.
Jamie Messner, Premium Mortgage, 585-944-8876.
See you next week.
See you next week.